I view my college days as sort of when I grew up, and those days in New York was really recovering. There's a lot of homeless. There were all sorts of people in the streets, but there was a special class of people who were the Elijahs of their time, or the Pinchases of their time. These really zealous people who would stand on the street corner with a big sign, often predicting the end and that it's time to repent, but preaching with tremendous authority on the street corner, even if nobody would listen to them. And it was always a little bit shocking. It was shocking also just to watch people's reaction. Every so often, somebody would actually engage with them, but most of the time, people saw someone speaking with this deep authority and thought, this person's got to be crazy, and they just sort of move away and walk around to the other side of the street. And I don't know who those people were. There were so many that maybe some were a little bit touched, and maybe someone were touched by the Spirit. It's hard to know. But I was thinking that image came to me because this Parsha and Pinchas have that similar notion, that zeal. And Pinchas in rabbinic tradition is associated with, not only associated with it, is considered to be the same person as Elijah. Elijah who comes to every simcha and bris, Elijah, who is the messianic harbinger, that's supposed to be Pinchas. And that's a strange claim that I want to explain. I want to actually look at why that tradition exists. Then I want to do something very typical of conservative studies. I want to look at a Geniza fragment from the 13th century. Genizas are places where documents that might have the name of God were placed rather than being thrown out, and they become an important source, of information about the spirit of a time. And finally, I want to bring to a close a very interesting comment by the Vilna Gaon that connects with this notion of Elijah and Pinchas being one person. So how come Pinchas would be considered to be Elijah? It's a little bit counterintuitive on the surface. Yet what we do in Torah reading all the time is that we look for similarities of words and of actions and behavior, and from those we begin to draw connections. So there are two qualities in particular that Pinchas and Elijah have in common that led to this long tradition, beginning first century is where we have the oldest, in a pseudo-philo in biblical antiquities, we have the oldest example of that. And those two qualities are zealotry and immortality. In the Haftarah that we didn't chant today, we hear about Elijah having this root, kuf nun aleph, this zealotry or passion or whatever, I don't really know, there's not a really good word. Jealousy is one of the ways we use that word in modern Hebrew. And Pinchas has that, and the language almost repeats, and the episodes repeat. And there is a way in which both of their zealotry actually turns to violence, interesting enough, also, because in the backdrop to that Haftarah is when Elijah is responsible for the death of lots of these false prophets after the episode on Mount Carmel. So there is a strong connection between zealotry, and then there is a connection between immortality. Elijah, and there's only a few people in the Bible, we're told that Elijah doesn't die. He goes up instead to heaven and, sort of sees these upper reaches. But interestingly, something similar happens with Pinchas that the ancients were very sensitive to. So this week's Torah portion happens, and Pinchas is a young guy. We don't actually know. It doesn't say. But about 40 or so years after this, in the book of Joshua, Pinchas shows up again, condemning the people for some idolatrous actions. So that's a normal lifespan, and maybe that's okay. But then he shows up at the very end of the book of Judges, which from the chronology of the Torah is several hundred years after Joshua. So Pinchas is at least, I don't know, 260, 360, 400 years old. In other words, he's got a lifespan from the episodes in the Torah that we can only find in the very ancients, like Methuselah. Methuselah lived 900 years. And from these and other hints, we have a very ancient Midrashic connection, which says they are two of the same people. Ralbag, Gersonides, says something very interesting about this. He says that even though it seems a little bit far-stretched to imagine that Pinchas and Elijah are the same person, it's better and more rational to have only one really weird thing, meaning one immortal, rather than to imagine two immortal human beings in the Torah, and that's why we say it is the same person. What we hear in this is a deep mystical side of Judaism, which is certainly there. But that has always been a tension. And in the 13th century, we have a Geniza fragment in which two cantors are having a fight with one another. Sorry, Cantor Shivers, this was before your time. A cantor comes, and in Havdalah, who do we mention in Havdalah? Elijah. Elijah. So there were different songs that were sung, piyutim, at that time, at the conclusion of Havdalah. And this visiting cantor sings a line which gives the genealogy from, there's also genealogy, which I'm not going to get into, that points out that it would be Pinchas. And a congregant goes up at the end of Havdalah, as anyone who's clergy knows, and says, Rabbi, or in this case, Cantor, you got it right except for, and said that you got it right except, you know, Elijah is not a Benjaminite. He's from the tribe of God, which changes it. And the reason we know is because we had another cantor who came and sang at Havdalah and gave this other source text, which proves, therefore, that Elijah and Pinchas are two different people. So there we have sort of a conservative approach to Judaism and scholarship, where we look at the history of these texts, and we see there's two streams, one which wants to look at Pinchas and Elijah as a single person, and therefore an immortal being, right? And that's a very spiritual, mystical sort of tradition. And this other that we've come from the Geniza, which is the sort of hard-headed Jewish sense, the more rational Jewish sense, it says, no way did this person live all of these years. We got two different people, and we've got textual proofs for it. And I think when it comes to religion, that it's interesting for us to imagine that Judaism allows us to sort of follow our own inclinations. There are some of us who are more spiritual and open to entertaining notions that people can have their souls migrate, that one person can live forever or transmigrate their soul from one body to another. And we also have a very rational side, and that Judaism has had a war between these two. And we're actually in an age, I think, where that more mystical, less rational side has found a voice again, certainly in parts of the Orthodox world. But I'd say the Neo-Hasidic movement, which I have a certain kinship to, are examples of that other side, the inexplicable side of religion, which also speaks to us. And we get to live with both of them. But I want to leave you, because it's supposed to be a sermon and not just a lecture, with a beautiful comment by the Vilna Gaon, who was one of the greatest minds in Judaism, 1700s, is that about right? One of these people who knew everything about Judaism, which is very hard to do, just this encyclopedic mind. And he draws on this tradition of Pinchas and Elijah being connected and a section of the Zohar which mentions it. And he talks about that every time you get a new soul, you get a new name. Every time you get a new soul, you get a new name. Now, if you are connected to the mystical branches, you can hear in that just this notion on Shabbat, we get an extra soul. You can imagine forces flowing in and out of your life. And if you're a little more rational, and this is what I want to end with because it should work for everyone on the sort of psycho-spiritual level, we go through our lives and we change. Hopefully we change. I just was meeting and speaking with a woman who is trying to reinvent herself right now. The kids are gone. It's a new phase of life. And we change at those moments. And we have customs and traditions even of changing our Jewish names then. And so I want to leave you with that notion of what is your name now? What was your name when you were younger? And as you think about this next phase, as we move towards the high holiday season, what's the name you'd like to be known for as you move and develop into your next phase of life? Shabbat Shalom.